Welcome to a special episode of the Brother 3T Tips, Trends, and Techniques podcast, where we'll be taking a deeper look into some of the latest trends that are dramatically changing ways of working and workplaces, and what they mean for how organizations will work in the future. Now, let's get to the show.
Hello, and welcome to the Brother Podcast. I'm your host, Kelly Buttrick. Now, today is a little different, as we're talking with a panel of experts on a lava hot topic, the evolution and future of work. From Brother, we have Dan Waldinger, Senior Director of B2B Marketing, and James Rouse, Senior Manager of Consulting and Managed Print Services. Joining us today is Dr. Carl Van Horn. He is a prolific author, distinguished professor of public policy at Rutgers Edward J. Blaustein School of Planning and Public Policy. He's also the director of the John J. Heldrick Center for Workforce Development and senior advisor for strategy and planning in the office of New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy. Quite impressive. Now, let's jump right in with the first question. What is the number one lesson the pandemic has taught us about the evolution of work? Dr. Van Horn?
Yeah, thank you, Kelly. I think the number one lesson we've learned so far is how quickly people can adapt to a radical change that comes upon them suddenly. As we're recording this now, it was about almost exactly a year ago that the president and governors literally locked down the states in order to stop the spread of the virus, not knowing what the future was going to look like. Obviously, that helped save lives, but it certainly made businesses radically changed. It also, unfortunately, cost many people their jobs, at least temporarily. But what we found is that we can do things differently, and businesses and workers have pivoted to the new normal. How long that will go on in terms of the way in which we restructure business is a separate question, which we'll get to. But I think in the first order of business, what we found is the adaptability of workers and businesses to radical change.
Absolutely. Dan, do you want to comment on that?
Hi, thank you. Yes, I'd like to certainly echo Dr. Van Horn's points, and particularly on the word normal. You know, as marketing professionals, you know, it's easy for us to plan, produce, and target different markets. And we understand the life cycle associated with that. We introduce products, we look for growth stages, we shift into maturity, and then ultimately decline. And this is sort of easy to plan, and it's normal. But as the doctor said, we really have sort of a new normal here. And I think he hit the nail on the head. As organizations, just the ability to adapt. I mean, we did not plan for this scenario. And of course, our customers didn't plan for this scenario. So we had to respond very quickly and make sure we could deliver products to them and make sure we can deliver services. And there was nothing normal about that. For us in the print industry, it was in maturity already, but it's still a huge market with billions spent on hardware and hundreds of billions of pages produced annually. But what we did see is the COVID pandemic really accelerated this shift away from print. And we call that digital transformation, and that's been happening, but it was certainly accelerated. So, you know, studies show that, you know, moving from manual-based processes or paper-based processes to digital processes could deliver greater efficiencies. And certainly in the new norm and the way we were all working and the evolution of this work, working from home and not in the office created, you know, opportunities for efficiencies as well. For instance, our parent company is in Japan, and I used to fly to Japan 5 times a year and meet with them and then follow up via email. Well, now magically they can get me any time of the day. They know where I am, and I'm on calls with them 2, 3, 4 times a week. So one could say we're being much more efficient and getting a lot done. We did some studies recently, and we talked to our customers. We did about 50 individual interviews in November and December, and it's interesting. They're also looking for efficiencies as well. The first question we asked them was, you know, what do you think the post-pandemic back-to-work situation is going to work? Staying on the theme of evolution of work for a second. And all of them, 250 employee, 1,000 employee, 10,000 employee companies said they're not going back to pre-pandemic levels. So that means they're looking at their office place, right? They're looking at their technology. They may not need as much square footage. They may not need as much furniture. They may not need as many printers as they had before. Of course, we're talking to them about their larger copiers and their printers, and many of them told us, you know, those are sitting idle, and we don't even know if we're going to return back to pre-pandemic levels from a print volume perspective. So it's really an opportunity to look at new efficiencies and cost savings and sort of redefine and remake and basically right-size an environment based on the demands of the day. So that's what we're seeing. We're really seeing this acceleration. And I think Doctor hit it on the head when he talked about an organization's ability to adapt and become more efficient and look for ways for continuous improvement.
Absolutely. And Dr. Van Horn, have you experienced anything related to what Dan was just talking about, similar to what their customers were saying?
Yes, of course. I mean, I run a research organization at the university, and my staff was sent home for their safety a year ago. And all of them are very high functioning, very tech savvy people. But even with that, you know, we had things we had to adjust to, how to organize collaborations, how to not exhaust each other on visual calls, which can be very difficult as opposed to casual interactions. So you have to schedule and plan. Everything has to be planned more than the casual interaction. I mean, I think that that also has some potential downsides, as I think it can erode not only the cooperative spirit that people develop when they work together, the informal conversations that people have on their way to get a cup of coffee or if they bump into each other in the hallway. And so we try to replicate that. And I know a lot of other businesses have too, but it's hard to do that because you have to schedule those. You know, it's very different than informal interaction. I just want to make one other point. I think that the change here revealed two things. We talked mainly about what I would say positive developments, but there were also some underlying negative points too, which is there are a lot of businesses and workers who were not able to work in this new environment remotely. Either they were working in person, the people we now call essential workers, because they had to. They can't do warehouse stocking when they're, you know, from the phone or an online visual call. Certainly our healthcare workers. And then the other thing is we discovered how deep the digital divide is in this country, that even as one of the wealthiest countries in the world, if not the wealthiest, there's still a significant number of people and businesses that aren't actually connected to the internet and the cloud and all the things that those of us who work in that space take advantage of and benefit from.
Absolutely. James, you have mentioned before the decisions that were made regarding digital transformation and that acceleration. Do you care to comment further?
Sure, thank you. I spent most of my career in consulting, where the pattern is to make recommendations to customers. They may be very excited about the opportunity, but when it comes time to make the change, the appetite often is not there because of the inertia of the situation. And so we've seen a lot of very positive recommendations sort of fall by the wayside. And I think that as the pandemic has come across, a lot of those decisions, which were good decisions to be made, there, you know, Dr. Van Horn has talked about some of the challenges, but on the positive side as well, there's some efficiencies and ways that things can be done with where the employees can have a better opportunity in their work-life balance and other areas and cost efficiencies. So some of these changes would be good things, but there just was not the desire at the moment. Well, when the pandemic came in and these changes were forced upon companies, a lot of the results that happened from streamlining to gaining efficiencies, especially in the document space, things that used to be very paper intensive are no longer as needed or are done in a different manner. So we see that a lot of these changes are happening. We see one of the most important things is to help the employees through that change, the process of change management. How do you address it? How do you incent the employees to adopt the change and then to make it last? So we see that that's going to be more and more important as we move into the coming years and seeing some of these changes stay in place. And part of the thing that is going to be interesting to see is, do these changes stay around or do we go back to normal or do we even really want to go back to the way it was before?
Absolutely. Dr. Van Horn, speaking of going back or not going back to the way it was before and some of the digital transformation challenges that people are experiencing, what about microbusinesses? How can they be effective in this new environment?
Yeah, that's a great question because they are in the group that often were not dealing in the digital world, and now they have to transition to that in order to serve their customers. Unfortunately, many of these businesses are no longer in business. They may be, in a sense, in the freezer waiting to come back out, but a lot of them are probably gone forever because those who could pivot quickly and had the digital capacity to just think of people who needed that to be able to process payments. If you were a cash business, people stopped coming into your store to use cash. So, you know, that is a continuing struggle. And I think that there's a lot of support in the larger business community and in nonprofits to try to help those businesses, Main Street businesses, come back. But that's going to be a struggle, I think, for many of them. You know, we did a survey at the Heldrick Center about 3 or 4 months ago. And of businesses in New Jersey, 2,000 businesses responded, many of them small minority women-owned businesses with less than 10 employees. And the number one point that they made, perhaps not surprisingly, is how can I know when my customers are going to feel safe to come back? Now, with the vaccines coming online and being widely distributed, there seems to be light at the end of the tunnel, in the best sense of that word, but that they're still stuck with that problem. You know, they may never really pivot to a full digital electronic environment because the cost of doing that are too high, but they need their customers to feel comfortable to come back so they continue to remain in business.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much for doing a deep dive on the work itself. Let's turn a little bit and dive into the worker. Do Americans have a healthy work-life balance? And how can the evolution future of work help improve that if we have challenges?
You know, it's when you poll people on this, which we have at the Heldrick Center as well, and other people too, the answer is basically most Americans are concerned about their work-life balance. And it obviously skyrocketed during the pandemic, and it's probably still going on in many places. Especially for those who have children or caring for elderly relatives, perhaps, because they were trying to work and also handle these personal responsibilities and couldn't send their children to school, didn't want to bring caregivers into the home for safety reasons. So they had to do it themselves. So what that meant was many longer days and very few breaks. And we see this also in the rise of reported mental stress and anxiety that people have, not just about the disease, but about trying to manage all this at the same time. So I think one of the points, and this happened before the pandemic, but it just became more difficult, was that workers for many years have said they're having trouble setting boundaries between work and life. So, you know, that's, I think, a continuing struggle. I know some companies that I've spoken to have declared certain days are no meeting days, meaning you need time to think and write and examine as opposed to constantly being in a meeting. They've also tried to institute end of day points so that after a certain point, you're not expected to return an email, let's say after 6 o'clock or whatever the normal ending time was where you'd be getting in your car, perhaps, or a train and going home. So I think this is something businesses need to think about. They need to examine, because if people reach that burnout point, then they're not going to be productive anymore.
That makes total sense. James, if I recall, you did your own, I don't know if it was formal or informal, polling within your own company. What did you find out there?
Yes, we did internal employee surveys, and we did find that exactly what Dr. Van Horn is describing. It's so difficult to maintain that work-life balance. And in some ways, it's harder, even though employees are working from home, they're staying in the home. But that balance is harder, and it really comes down to that we're not really measuring balance. We're measuring, as Dr. Van Horn said, we're measuring the boundaries. And those boundaries are no longer there. You have roles like employee and parent or teacher now for so many people, or caregiver. And so those roles overlap. And what used to be a boundary of commuting to and from work, and even though we had cell phones and you were always available, you still had that mental barrier of, okay, I'm off work and now I'm going into my home environment. We don't have those boundaries anymore. And we're really seeing that come through in these surveys, in discussions with our employees, and it wears on people because there's never a point where they're not both a worker and a caregiver. And we just need that downtime in order to remain focused when we can be our best at work.
Absolutely. That makes total sense. Now, Dan, do you have any comments on work-life balance, or maybe I should say work-life imbalance that's going on right now?
Yeah. I mean, as James said, I think as we speak to our employees, you know, generally they feel they're more efficient and they really like working from home. However, when you start to think about what's lost, and I think Dr. Van Horn hit on this earlier, is to me the efficiency of losing that in-person discussion, you know, reading a person's body language, having a walk-by meeting, building consensus around a project in a meeting room where we're all there. You know, having lunch together, I think this plays really well in the office, right? Those are things that work really well. So I think what we really need to do is, as we get back to some normalcy, and maybe not pre-pandemic levels, but it's how do we find the efficiencies in both worlds, right? How do we have a certain percentage of the workforce back in the office, maybe not all the time? How do we still have those in-person intimate moments where we can solve a problem together and build camaraderie? And at the same time, you know, utilize the benefits from a work from home or frankly, a work anywhere new norm.
That makes total sense. And I'm sure there are many people out there asking themselves and their leadership those very same questions. Dr. Van Horn, as managers, as leaders in companies that are having to help their workers navigate this in-between time or this hybrid model, do you have any thoughts on that? How they should best, I guess, like I said, navigate those tumultuous waters?
Yes, I think a couple of points I'd make. First of all, I think that, as Dan suggested and James, they should be thinking about this as a problem that needs to be addressed as managers. And I know I'm thinking about it, which in doing things about it, which is how do we help people achieve a better balance? How do we, while we're still working remote or some blended version of remote and in person, recreate some of those advantages that we had when we were all in the office? And that may mean what would seem to be rather artificial because we have to arrange them, as I said before, but I think they're still very important. I think, too, we also need to understand that not everybody is in the same position in their ability to manage their work-life balance. So, again, if they are, number one, if they still have potentially underlying health conditions that make it impossible for them to take a vaccine or they're unwilling to do that, you know, we have to make sure that those people aren't punished for essentially doing what is good for their health or for their family. Not that businesses didn't ever think about that, but I think there's a lot more intentionality that needs to go into that now. I think the other point I'd say lastly is that we need to think about how we can give people flexibility to blend their work and their recreational time so that we do set those boundaries. Because if you, as I said before, if you're not doing that, they're not going to be productive. They may be searching for another place to work, which you don't want to lose a valuable employee. And I said that was the last point, but I want to add one other one, which is I think that we need to give people a chance to really express themselves and talk about this, you know, because this has been an terribly challenging experience. And I know I've tried to do that, you know, to have my employees talk about what they're going through, either to me directly or in group settings or to their colleagues, because people can't just bottle all this up. They have to have a time to reflect on it and think about how they can move forward productively.
I'm with you 100%. And Dan, obviously you did that when you sent out your survey, or your team sent out the survey within Brother, just to kind of ask where people were and what they were feeling. It is important to have those discussions. One of the things you mentioned that came out of that is the multiple hats, the within the same environment that people were having to care for their elderly parents or their children. So speaking of children, as we are looking ahead at what the future of work looks like, how can we better prepare our children for what that's going to be?
Yeah, I mean, as a business leader, you know, for us, it's all about continuous improvement. And that continuous improvement and those new efficiencies are going to come from the students entering the workforce in the future. So, you know, in many ways, the students of today are better prepared for this new way of working. They're raised on digital technology. They're very comfortable with web conferencing. They understand how to share documents and information across the internet and across secure sites. And generally, they're much more in tune with the ways of working today. So much so that they have an advantage over, say, some of us older people who were raised on paper and sort of, you know, have been living in two worlds, right? The paper-based world and the digital world. So if I would say one recommendation to prepare our students, if possible, teach them some patience with us older generation, because as they come into the workforce and they have great new ideas on how to restructure and re-engineer and really drive towards continuous improvement, there's going to be legacy workflows and legacy systems in place that frankly are serving the workers of today. So to the extent that they can give them patience and give them more so awareness of the fact that we're going to live in these two worlds for a while, that would be, I think, a fantastic way to prepare them.
Oh, sure. And Dr. Van Horn, you obviously are around students all the time at Rutgers. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think Dan's right about what the students are like. I think you need to sometimes teach them that they are entering an intergenerational workforce, right? So not everybody is a digital native. But even beyond that, the idea of relying upon everybody reading every email, every text that comes to them in a timely manner, which they may be used to doing with their friends and colleagues, is not the way of the world for everybody. So whether it's patience or just an awareness, and vice versa, I mean, the more mature workers need to understand that some of their younger colleagues grew up with different expectations, and they need to work with them as well. So it's the idea of intergenerational cooperation is one that I think should be high on the list of managers. And it can be ultimately a very positive and productive conversation and experience, but it's one that can't be ignored. That's the point. It really is something you need to be intentional about and work with those different generations so they can benefit from each other's unique skills and abilities.
I love that. Now, James, when you talk about how often you used to travel for work and when you would go to the office location, your collaborations were intentional. You went there for a purpose you didn't just go there to stand around the water cooler and chit chat. So as we're training our new workers, what are your thoughts on how best to create that kind of collaborative mindset digitally?
I think you used the key word there. It's collaboration. For employees who are doing functions that are individual, that may not be as big of an issue. Home-based employees, that's been standard practice for decades now, if the work can be done as an individual. But when people have to work together, that's what's really changing. What used to be sitting around a conference table, marking up a document, or going to a whiteboard and working on a workflow, just creating ideas and bouncing ideas off one another, that's much harder to do electronically or digitally. It's much harder to do when we're in different locations. And that's the part that I think the younger generation is going to have an advantage, because although it's a challenge for them doing school this year and more things are on, education is being done remotely, even colleges are being taught remotely, the practice of collaborating on school projects, on other things that they may work on, doing that electronically, they'll be better prepared for going into the workforce. Now, the challenge, as we've been talking about, is how do you integrate that with people who are much more comfortable with the in-person? And I think that we will see that dynamic is going to be a challenge over the coming years. But I do think that as these students and as these younger people come into the workforce and they work together, it really provides an opportunity for us to move forward. And if we're not all tied to, again, we're in the printing industry, we're not all tied to the paper, then those document processes and sharing documents and marking them up online are all going to be ways that people work better. And then when we have the opportunity to come together, as you mentioned, it is more intentional, it is more focused, and we can really know that we're here for a purpose. And for those special occasions, we're ready to go and make that project work. But our day-to-day work will be much more done collaboratively through remote process.
Certainly. Now, speaking of being in person, I just have to ask Dr. Van Horn, because I think anybody listening would love to be a fly on the wall as you are advising Governor Phil Murphy. And is there anything you can share with us, you know, on the record about some of what you suggested to him?
Well, the short answer is those are confidential conversations, but I can say, broadly speaking, working with his colleagues in the governor's office and the cabinet that he appointed, the idea is that he's interested in evidence-based work and analysis to help strengthen the economy and to help people that are struggling. And so he's charged us with that responsibility. And then he obviously has to make the decisions. But it's our job to bring that evidence to him and to give him options for creatively addressing the problems the state faces. And I know I'm biased, but I think he's done a very good job at that. He's a very seasoned manager. He was on the managing committee at Goldman and Sachs before he retired and then spent years as a diplomat in representing the United States in Germany. So he's a very experienced leader and manager. And so I think he knows what to have his team focus on and what's important, and also knows how to absorb advice from many different quarters, certainly not just from me, but from all the many people, not only who work for him, but also people he meets around the state.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And certainly understand about the non-disclosure, but appreciate what you could share with us. Now, Dan and James, as you guys are in the corporate environment, how do you think the governor can work with organizations and businesses to maintain a footprint or percentage of workforce to remain in New Jersey during this evolution of work?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously, this is what we've been talking about, you know, this hybrid workforce, this work from anywhere world where we're quickly evolving to, if we're not already there today. And I'm sure the doctor has covered these types of suggestions with the governor already. But certainly, we've been talking about, you know, a percentage of workforce being outside of New Jersey. Well, in reality, the governor has a vested interest to keep the workers in New Jersey, right? So spending money in New Jersey, living in New Jersey, paying taxes in New Jersey. And obviously, the governor is also focused on providing incentives for businesses to be headquartered in New Jersey. So maybe there's some sort of, you know, incentive to say, look, a percentage of the workforce still should be in New Jersey, not totally limiting, but certainly there's talent in New Jersey, there's culture in New Jersey. We want people to live in New Jersey. I personally live in New Jersey, so I think these are the things I'm sure that the doctor and the governor are talking about.
James, care to weigh in?
Well, as I'm a field-based employee, so I'm actually not in New Jersey, but I do miss the days of traveling there. And I think that that's another part of the aspect is keeping those businesses that are headquartered in New Jersey and are there so that when people like myself come in from the field, we're there, we're contributing to what's happening in New Jersey. We're contributing to the economy by staying and shopping and whatever else we do while we're there. So it's definitely a desire to see that vibrant economy continue, especially with employees based there and the businesses staying as well.
Absolutely. And we're coming up at the end of our podcast time. Unfortunately, time has really flown with you guys. Thank you so much, Dr. Van Horn, Dan, and James, for your time and insights. I don't know about our listeners, but this discussion has been incredibly fascinating. My brain is just spinning. Also, of course, thanks to you, our listeners, for spending time with us today and learning and absorbing some experience with the evolution and future of work. If you would like to learn more about Dr. Van Horn and the future of work, you can visit rutgers.edu or you can visit brother-usa.com. Again, thank you so much, everyone. And I hope everybody has a great future of work.
Thank you for joining us for the Brother 3T Tips, Trends, and Techniques podcast. Join us on our next episode as we continue to provide B2B sales reps the top-selling tips and techniques about Brother products, as well as exploring the latest market trends, all in less than 10 minutes. We'll see you next time.